Jacobson, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. I very much appreciate the court's willingness to hear from the Civil Justice Institute as amicus in this matter. I'm here as a friend of the court, and I want to try to be helpful. I think I can be helpful. Chief Justice, you were asking about carpet remnant and the word integral as written in carpet remnant, and that's obviously a very important word, but it has to be viewed in the context of carpet remnant generally. And I was surprised that in the entire morning session, no one was really talking about the facts of carpet remnant and the real lack of daylight between carpet remnant in this case on the B prong. This should be a fairly easy B prong case. In carpet remnant, the overwhelming majority of carpet remnant sales included installation, and the court acknowledged that in its opinion. In carpet remnant, what the court said was it would be impossible for this business to meet the test if it considered all of the places where carpet was installed to be places of business of the employer. And the court also said in carpet remnant that if an employer can satisfy the C prong, it would be inappropriate for the commissioner to apply the A and the B prongs mechanically and overly restrictively in a manner that causes people in this situation to be considered employees.
So what about the fact that the carpet business had the two retail locations, had a sort of a traditional workplace?
That is a differentiating factor, Justice Patterson, but it shouldn't matter here because the question is not what is a work site, the question is what is not. And what the court said very clearly in carpet remnant is that the remote job sites where the carpets were installed weren't going to be work sites of the employer. So I agree that that is a difference here, but it's a distinction without a difference because what the court said very clearly is it's not a work site there. So if the court agrees that the B prong, we're not in virgin snow, that we've been operating for 30 years on the idea that when you are sending employees, when you're sending contractors out to remote sites, that is not places of business under the B prong. That was the context in which the court used the word integral.
But wasn't it, if I remember correctly, a 60-40 split, that 40% of carpet remnant sales were take it from the showroom, out you go, bring it home?
Because they also sold area rugs.
Exactly.
But if you're talking about their sales of wall-to-wall carpets or the non-area rugs, it was not clear from this court's opinion in carpet remnant the percentage of non-area rugs that also included installation. But since it was 60% overall and they also sold area rugs, it certainly suggests that it's much more than 60% of the traditional wall-to-wall carpet that also involved installation. So what the commissioner is doing here, it's a headlong run at carpet remnant. I mean, this is a situation where the commissioner is trying to come up with a difference, but there really isn't one. The court, it would be very difficult for the court to find that East Bay drywall doesn't satisfy the B prong without doing some real violence to carpet remnant and achieving all of the negative results that Justice Patterson was asking about this morning. So this, to me, as a friend of the court, I've looked at this six ways from Sunday. It seems like an easy B prong case and a more difficult C prong case.
What would be the problem with adopting Justice O'Hearn's dissent in remnant and saying that the public policy underpinning the statute is the driving force, and commissioners and administrative agencies have expertise and are charged with carrying out that policy? And what would be the wrong approach? What would be wrong with that approach?
So there's, Judge Fuentes, there are parts of Justice O'Hearn's dissent that I happen to agree with. And I want to be very clear that there is very little daylight between Mr. Hamner and me and my client on the idea that the commissioner is entitled to deference. And more important than that, or just as important as that, I can't believe that this court wants to be in the business of fly-specking what is a very fact-intensive analysis on the C prong. The problem here is that, you know, I think even Justice O'Hearn, when looking at these facts and seeing that carpet remnant was decided the way it was 6-1 over his dissent, for the commissioner to be attacking carpet remnant in this way on the B prong, what the appellate division said is we don't owe the commissioner deference when he is acting in this manner with regard to the B prong, where this court spoke so clearly in carpet remnant. The C prong is, you know, this is where it gets more difficult. Because what the court said, you know, and again, there are aspects of this case that are very similar to Carpet Remnant. The businesses, the contractors in Carpet Remnant didn't advertise very much. It said that they might have advertised in the local shopper's guide. They might have had business cards. No storefronts, no nothing else. And yet this court held that the C prong was satisfied in Carpet Remnant. Chief Justice, you asked about the factors that this court stated in Carpet Remnant. They're clearly relevant. I mean, they have to be. This court called them out as reasons why you would expect a business to be able to answer these questions in order to satisfy the business's burden. And it's the business's burden. No question about that. Again, no daylight between Mr. Hamner and me. This is the business's burden. But the problem is, in the context, when the court set forth those factors in Carpet Remnant, it didn't say these are the factors in every case. It used those questions because they were highly illustrative and relevant in the context of Carpet Remnant. In our brief, we cited a slew of appellate division decisions where the appellate division did not walk through those exact questions and nevertheless either held the C prong satisfied or not satisfied because they were looking at a contextual analysis of whether those businesses would be able to survive independent of their relationship with the putative employer. So it would be fair for this court to write an opinion in this case saying these are the factors and they must be considered in all cases. It wouldn't be fair to hold East Bay Drywall to that because the court didn't say that in Carpet Remnant. It could say it now. It could also say we charge the commissioner with coming up with a standard that businesses in East Bay Drywall's position have to meet. But what is critical here, and I'm so glad that the court gave me an opportunity to address it, the commissioner didn't say what East Bay was supposed to do here other than answer an effectively unanswerable question. East Bay Drywall did come forward with evidence, Judge Fuentes. I mean, they did come forward with the certificates of insurance, with the certificates that they, with the proof that they were independent businesses of a sort. The commissioner did not have any indication of fraud here other than the commissioner came forward with the evidence of absence, not because they said we couldn't find these people years later. Fair enough. That's a relevant factor. But the commissioner didn't say that we find that there's funny business going on here. The commissioner didn't say we have this evidence that there's a problem here. And so when particularly my fellow amicus says, you know, all of the bad things that are going to happen here if this court doesn't hold East Bay Drywall responsible for these unemployment taxes, the problem is nobody's condoning fraud. Nobody's condoning willful misclassification. The problem is there's no evidence here that this business did anything knowingly wrong. The administrative law judge accepted the testimony of East Bay Drywall's principal that he asked these folks what was going on. He thought they were independent businesses. So Judge Fuentes, I'm struggling because you're right. You're absolutely right, and Justice O'Hearn was right, that the commissioner is owed deference here. But deference to what? Deference to what standard? The commissioner just said, I don't like your evidence, but I'm not going to tell you what evidence you should have had.
If the employer, in some fashion, signaled that it was only going to deal with independent contractors, that's it. Mm-hmm. You're not an independent contractor. You're not doing business with me. What would that mean for prong C?
Well,
because that may signal to those people, you better form some sort of limited liability corporation, sort of protect yourself.
So, Justice Albin, that's a fair question, but I think that it wouldn't be enough. In other words, if the commissioner came forward with evidence that that's what the, in response to the same kind of evidence that East Bay Drywall had here, because again, I want to be careful that I'm not sounding like I'm putting the evidentiary burden on the commissioner because I'm not. But if the company in East Bay Drywall's position came forward with the same evidence that it came forward with, but the commissioner elicited testimony that this was all on a wink and a nod. There was an actual human being that they were able to examine, that this was a wink and a nod. I was told that unless I was incorporated, they wouldn't engage me. They didn't ask me any questions about whether I was incorporated yesterday, whether I'll be incorporated tomorrow. We'd be in a different position here. But that's not That's not the evidence the commissioner had. So again, I'm not looking to create a roadmap for fraud. I'm not looking to create a roadmap for employers in East Bay's position to figure out a way to get around prong C.
If the evidence were that before 2013, all these people were getting W-2s.
Very different situation, but that's not this. Because again, what I heard Ms. Barr saying is that there was one person who got a W-2 before. I didn't hear that it was one of these LLCs.
I was just giving a hypo. Yeah.
No, and in that hypothetical, I am not looking to make the commissioner's job unnecessarily difficult in a situation where the public policy of the state is to get unemployment taxes paid. But Justice Patterson asked a slew of you know, very incisive questions about the results that would happen if we interpret prong B the way the commissioner wants. And with regard to prong C, again, we want to create law out of this court that gives the commissioner clear guidance and also gives the business community clear guidance. And so here, it's an unfortunate record. It's a thin record because it's a two-person LLC that kind of did what it thought it had to do, did what it could do under these circumstances. The commissioner saying, not good enough. Not going to tell you what you should have done, but this wasn't good enough.
The commissioner saying, it's not my job to go out there and investigate. The presumption is you're an employee unless you meet A, B, and C. So here is C, and it may be tough to prove that the person is an independent contractor, but that's your burden.
Let me push back slightly on that, Justice Albin, because yes, it's the employer's burden. Yes, the commissioner should not have an overly tough job. But again, the facts of this case are really hard when you're looking at this from the perspective of a small business. The commissioner was coming in years later, and abracadabra, the people had disappeared, to harken back to this morning's case. Is it East Bay Drywall's fault that these businesses had years later evanesced, and so all it had was the credible, again, accepted as credible testimony of its principal that it had looked into these folks and believed that they were independent businesses? Years later, credible testimony, certificates of insurance, certificates of incorporation, and the commissioner just said, not enough. I get it. It's a struggle.
But do you dispute that the carpet remnant factors are tethered to the language of C?
So yes and no, Justice Patterson. They're tethered. Yes, they're tethered to the language of C. Before the court enumerated those factors, what the court said was that it was interested in making sure that these were businesses that would survive after the termination. So, you know, what I struggled with a little bit before lunch was, I'll grant you, I mean, let's assume for a minute that one of these contractors was doing business exclusively with East Bay for a year before. Before East Bay hired them, they were doing something else, but for 52 weeks a year, they were working for East Bay. But they've got the ability, they've got all the tools, they've got the know-how, they can go work for somebody else afterwards. That satisfies the language of the C prong in the statute. The questions that the court asked would help to elicit that answer, but I don't think that they can be considered the same questions you would ask of any kind of a business under any circumstances, and that's not what the court said in Carpet Remnant when it asked these questions, but it didn't say, we charge the appellate division with asking these questions in all contexts.
No, but it spoke to asking these questions in the context of installers and whether or not they are LLCs and independent contractors. Why did you need more guidance? If you're telling us that you've hired installers and they're LLCs,
you know, it's a fair question, Chief Justice. And as an amicus standing here looking for predictability in the law and clear guidance to the business community, again, the court could find, if it wants to, that here this business should have done more. But the problem that I have with that is Justice Patterson's problem. Is, you know, how
to identify which one that is.
Justice Patterson, you said, you know, what incentive does one of these businesses in the contractor position for East Bay Drywall have? What incentive do they have to give anything other than the answer of, I was there before, I'm going to be there after?
And yet that seems to be what the legislature wants proof on. Its language is such individual is customarily engaged and independently established trade, occupation, profession, or business. That says entity A, you got to go tell us about entity B.
It could be. And I would add, I mean, just from the perspective of fairness, I mean, I would say that if the court was going to make that the prospective instruction, I mean, I don't think it necessarily is fair to charge this defendant with that knowledge, because I don't think that it was that clear from Carpet Remnant. It's something that the court has to, again, it's just sitting there with the statute tabula rasa and doesn't have regulations. I would think it would be fairer to have to charge the commissioner with coming up with a regulation that makes that a little clearer. But I get it.
In Carpet Remnants, this court enumerated a number of factors. No? In determining whether or not prong C would be satisfied.
I don't know that I would agree that this court set forth factors, Justice Albin. This court asked some questions. What the court, the factor the court enumerated was the business going to be able to survive the termination of the relationship, because that's the public policy of the statute. Public policy of the statute is, if these people are going to be eligible for unemployment, unemployment contributions should be made for them. On the other hand, if they can survive the termination, then they shouldn't be. So the court asked, will this business be able to survive the termination? I think if you were asking whether East Bay Drywall was charged with, did they come forward with enough evidence to show that they believed that these businesses would survive, I think the answer is yes.
What do you think the court meant when it was talking about the duration and strength of each subcontractor's business, the number of his customers, the extent of, what do you think we were talking about?
Well, in the court's decision in Carpet Remnant, you talked about the way the carpet installation business worked. You mentioned that people tended to apprentice for a couple of years before they became installers in their own right. And so those businesses, contextually, the people were going to survive in the business because they had apprenticed, they, you know, finally had gotten businesses of their own, and now they were working with Burlington Carpet. Here, there's no such evidence in the record. I don't, you know, I'm the least knowledgeable of the lawyers here about how drywall works. I don't know how much training these folks needed in order to be able to install drywall at these sites. But the question is, did East Bay Drywall do enough on this record to show that they thought that these folks would be able to install drywall for somebody else after their relationship with East Bay ended?
You heard the discussion about B and the contentions on the respective sides of this room as to the impact of a ruling about the locations on B. Counsel on this side say that they can be considered employers for the most part. There might be exceptions, as I heard them. Counsel on this side said this would fundamentally upend the way residential construction is done in New Jersey. Is there a similar global concern with a ruling by this court in favor of the commissioner on C? And we've identified, I think the only thing I've heard so far is it's hard to get the information, or it can be hard to get the information. But is there something bigger than that?
It would depend on the ruling, Justice Patterson. I mean, I think that the short answer is no. The longer answer is that if this court were to set forth a test that it would be practically impossible for a business in East Bay's position to meet in the future, then yes, it would have the same global impact. And this court was very concerned in Carpet Remnant with not setting forth a rule that would be practically, that's the court's own words, that it would not be practically impossible to meet.
I thought you said earlier that the Carpet Remnant factors are relevant, and don't hold it against East Bay Drywall because of the argument that you've advanced, but it's not an unreasonable test. Is that your position?
I didn't understand. If that was Justice Patterson's question, then I perhaps misunderstood it. Because what I would say, what Justice Patterson was, would a ruling in the commissioner's favor necessarily create the same global concerns? No. Would requiring those questions to be asked universally, regardless of context, create global implications? Possibly, because that...
No. In cases like this, where we're dealing with installers as potential subcontractors who are either independent contractors or employees, do the Carpet Remnant factors make sense?
Yes.
Do you agree with the commissioner that just the business entity information was not enough for East Bay to rely on. That's what the commissioner said. You just gave us business entity information, and that doesn't cut it.
I don't agree with the commissioner here on the facts of this case, because the commissioner had no, I think we need to be fair to all sides here, Justice Albin. There was evidence that was put forward on this side of the table. There was really no evidence put forward on that side of the table other than the absence of things that the commissioner was looking for. There was no wink and nod. There was no indication that these people were kind of told to do things one way. There was no, with all respect, there was nothing on the record about somebody was treated as an employee yesterday and then a contractor today. So it's, in that circumstance, I think that you can't answer something with nothing. I think that the appellate division was looking at what the commissioner said and just kind of, it didn't seem fair to East Bay Drywall, and I think that I would kind of share that sense with the appellate division, is that you're asking, would it be enough in every case? And I'm not asserting it would be, because in a case where there is evidence of funny business, it wouldn't be enough. But here it was years later, no funny business. I think it is enough in this case, because Chief Justice, they did answer the question. They might not have answered the question exactly the way the commissioner wanted, but there was credible testimony from Mr. Descala that he thought that these were independent businesses that were going to survive the termination of the relationship. I don't think that it's entirely fair to the appellate division to say that they didn't consider the factors. They might not have enumerated them, but it was very relevant to the appellate division that the testimony was accepted as credible that East Bay Drywall considered those questions asked and answered.
Jacobson, is there anything else you'd like to add to your presentation?
No, I'm very grateful for the court's indulgence. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hamner, brief rebuttal?
I'll be brief. I just want to point out that there was no accusation of funny business or fraud here. And opposing counsel says that the lack of information provided by the department is not sufficient. Well, the department doesn't have the burden. The company has the burden. But as far as this is not gloom and doom for the construction industry. There's a difference between a subcontractor and a general contractor. A general contractor arranges for the various specialties to be done. East Bay is one of those specialties. They were asked what type of business they have. They say installation and finishing of drywall. That's what they do. That's what the general contractor contracted with them to do. The general contractor can, opposing counsel tried to say that East Bay arranges for this. A general contractor can say, I arrange for the specialties to be done. I arrange for a house to be built. The general contractor can do that. A general contractor can also have a physical location where they negotiate the prices and sign the contracts. General contractors often also have a place where potential buyers come, pick out cabinets, siding, the tile in the bathroom, that sort of thing. That's not the situation we have here. All East Bay did, or all they do, is installation and finishing of drywall. They are not a general contractor. They are the subcontractor, and they hired people.
But I think, counsel, what we're hearing is, and maybe I misunderstood the argument, but that if the construction sites are places of businesses for the purposes of the second part of prong B, then it doesn't matter if there's a headquarters or an office or a retail location or whatever, that no general contractor could meet that test because their place of business would be those locations as well.
Not necessarily. If their business model or their structure of the business, if they arrange for these things to be done, they're not on site. They're not actually hands-on doing it.
A general contractor generally is going to the construction site. Wouldn't you agree with that?
They can go and check the, but they're not doing the work there.
But that's their place of business. They're operating in those construction sites. The argument here is that what the test that you're under B that you're asking the court to adopt is going to loop in all general contractors.
Your Honor, what I'm saying is, depending on how it is structured, depending on what the general contractor actually does, That's a fact-specific issue.
Is it a good thing if we set up a test that incentivizes general contractors not to go to the work site?
Not necessarily.
I would say not at all.
Mr. Hamner, you've heard a number of questions about regulations. You've heard a plea for regulations, which would certainly help. Can you tell us, is the agency considering adopting regulations?
I don't know whether the agency is considering adopting regulations. We have 30 years of guidance from Carpet Remnant as far as the examples of things to be considered. I don't know whether regulations would be helpful. I don't know if regulations would be too limiting. What we have is a non-exhaustive list of possibilities in Carpet Remnant. I think that this regulations would probably maybe be too rigid, if you will, as far as whether something meets or doesn't meet the test of being an independent business.
Is it your position that the factors in Carpet Remnant are irrelevant to the present case, all of them, or not?
Relevant. No, they're not.
Are relevant.
Oh, relevant.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's several factors considered: the strength of the business, whether they have their own customers, how much money they make from this, from here as opposed to elsewhere. So, without looking at the exhaustive list, I would say that for the most part, they are relevant.
I think you heard my question from the outset. Is an employer such as East Bay supposed to sit down and ask all those questions, go through a checklist? How are they supposed to go about doing this?
They can. East Bay claims that they know these people in the business. They're familiar with them. They ask other people who are familiar with them. It was all word of mouth, referrals from other construction entities. They can ask these people. They can find out. They can look into them. They can see if they have an internet presence. They can find out if they have a business address. There's many things they can do. Opposing counsel thinks that the lack of labor doing this is somehow a problem, but it's not labor's burden. It's the burden of the prospective employer.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to all counsel. Very fine arguments, very helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement.